I assume that a good many of you who are listening have heard of Laurie Anderson. Perhaps many of you have not. Laurie Anderson is... She works in multimedia as a performing artist, but she herself is multi-gifted, which is part of it. Laurie Anderson, recently in Chicago, a number of times, at the Civic Opera House and once at Park West, and there's a tremendous audience, primarily of young people, but others as well, aware that she's onto something about this crazy high-tech age we live in, age of so much tension and weaponry can wipe us all out. And we're wondering what has happened. It's all happening at once. And Laurie, sculptor, performer, violinist, poet, all this rolled into one, and she's a guest today. Most recently, her most recent work goes on for 2 nights, 6 hours, called The United States. Her previously best-known work was called Oh, Superman. And her music is exactly that, her music. And yet somehow we have a feeling that she's on to this random, cockeyed, crazy moment in which we live. And in any event, Harper and Row, is it Harper and Row?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that put out United States.
Right.
Perhaps you and I can both read from that as we go along, as well as the album that is called The United States, Laurie Anderson, with excerpts, the full albums.
Yeah, 5 records.
Yeah, I think we should do, let's do this. 2 years ago, you're on the program.
Yeah.
And we got a lot of, I remember the reaction, quite a lot of phone calls. I'm mystified,
uh-huh.
but taken
uh-huh.
by you and your music. Suppose you go back to that conversation. We arbitrarily start in the middle of one of your pieces or toward
mm-hmm.
the end of it and
mm-hmm.
you say something about yourself.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I love the way you hold your pen and pencil. I no longer love it.
How do we begin? This is called Sweaters, and we can come to the lyrics in a moment, but the instrumentation.
Well, that starts with being out of breath.
And, being out of breath, you say.
Yeah. Well, it starts with a kind of long yowl, which a lot of these songs kind of start with, wolf howls, and in this case, a lot of the rhythm is really just sort of heavy breathing. And that's why I chose bagpipes for it, because that's one of those breath instruments. At the end of that song, it just sounds like he's falling into some kind of well, but it's like a vacuum cleaner, I think. Bagpipe sort of dies in a beautiful way. Just, and that was a song that's in another version for Juice Harp, and the Juice Harp kind of got edited out because it was a little too close to the bagpipes.
And you were violin here,
mm-hmm.
just the electrified
yeah.
violin.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can, before we, well, this song itself, this is not my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying that it's yours.
Mm-hmm.
It's not
and
my
nobody,
because the lyrics
really
to me, you have stronger lyrics. But yeah, this is one that I no longer love your eyes, but I no longer love the color of your sweaters. But then I no longer love the way you hold your pens and pencils. I like that. You know.
Mm-hmm.
But why is this your favorite?
I guess because it came out so differently than anything I thought. You know, it seemed to change itself as I worked on it. Because I threw away a lot of tape working on it. And it wasn't a kind of song that I would sit down and try to write. Mostly because I work in the studio. And just the way things happen in the studio, lots of mistakes and lots of sort of Well, I use a lot of electronics, and so they suggest totally different directions for the songs.
So
and this one went off into...
You're talking about the technical aspects, the instrumentation. I'm going to ask you about that, too, but influences on you. Some of the contemporary composers, like Glass, influence you. But what about the lyrics? I mean, is that secondary to you?
No, it's first.
It
it's really first. Most of the music I do has some kind of... That's why this song is an odd exception. Has some kind of very methodic, digital sort of ground to it. And then over that, the language is... makes its own sort of stop-start sort of conversational rhythms. They're really kind of...
And you went on, Laura, this was 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You went on explaining. I've got to ask who you are. I know that you came... I think it's natural you come out of Middle America. You came out of Glen Helen.
Mm-hmm.
A rather family, fairly well off.
Mm-hmm.
And every kind of influence in the world is on you. Why don't you pick up who you are and the kind of, and what you do? Because when I saw the Civic Opera, Civic Opera thing, it was political too, a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And there were images of Vietnam throughout. And there was Vietnamese kind of music. And there were... And, of course, technology and its effect on us. And
yeah.
How you got this way, we have to start a little... You don't mind if we go back to beginning?
No,
influences.
No. I mean, I think... I'm not sure what I have... how Glen Ellen has influenced my work, but, you know, what I really think is that this is the way English should be spoken, the way we speak it here. That, to me, is the most beautiful kind of English. So that's my bias. And now I live... in New York and have for the last, since I came to school there in 67. I went to college there. And now I live...
It was art, you were majoring art
yeah,
history.
Yeah, art history, right.
Yeah.
And so I live on this island, you know, I live next to the Hudson River and across the river is America. I have a pretty good view, but also, like other people who live in Manhattan, it's a little bit removed from the country. You know, so I think that a lot of times I really value the fact that I come from here, because in New York it really is kind of a strange outpost almost. You know, it doesn't sometimes have a lot to do with this country, and the whole point of working on this long thing, United States, which I did from 1979 to 83, was to make a portrait of the country, but not, it ended up being not so much about the United States as about people who lived with technology and people who had a lot of phones and computers and television sets and how do you still stay human with all those machines? So that's really the kind of the theme of the work. And I think that people who saw this work in, let's say, maybe Berlin, would maybe understand it a little better than, say, someone who lived in rural Tennessee, because it's about technology even more than this particular country, in a way.
And so we're talking about more and more the computer, high-tech, silicon chips, all aspects, and you said a moment ago, how to do that and still retain a semblance of humanity.
Right. Well, and a lot of the things that I say about technology in this particular work are pretty critical of it. But at the same time, I'm saying that stuff through 15,000 watts of power and lots of electronics and, you know, a sort of state-of-the-art technology. So that's saying at least a couple of things. I hate it, and I love it. And I love it because it's fast. Because, like, the brain is just... You know, instantly.
You just said you love it because it's fast like the brain. That's what happens on stage, or for that matter, looking through your book, or even hearing the passages from the music itself, music and sound and talk. You're using every aspect of technology.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fast, you say, like a brain. So is this the way you feel we are being had, well, had a are being used? Things are happening so fast that a profound analysis may be tough for any subject.
It's got to be a fast analysis. You've got to kind of work on the run. It's true. And I think Well, I came across a pretty interesting theory of about technology that I was on a German television show about a few weeks ago.
We should point out, by the way, that you're very popular in Europe and Germany and smash in England, that you're known in non-American countries mm-hmm. as well.
And this particular show was crazy. It was one of the few live shows left in the world, you know, now that most TV is sort of canned. And this thing had, there were four European astronauts and Tina Turner and a Russian violinist and me. Oh, this is a great combination. And
Entente.
Yeah, right. And afterwards, I was spent some time talking to this Dutch astronaut, and this guy was, he was very strange. He was wearing these contact lenses that had X's through them because they were studying his eye motion, and they couldn't keep track of his irises. So, These things are like orbiting around in his eyes. And I say, listen, you've got to take this off. If we're going to talk, I can't look at your eyes being crossed out like that. So we talked for hours, and one of his theories is real interesting. And basically he's saying technology is a parasite that we've invented. It's a life form that we invented half a century ago, essentially. And that, like any parasite, it's beginning to leave its host and take on a life of its own. What we're actually looking at is actually these two life forms beginning to meld together of technology, in a sense, as a new nature. What you measure yourself against instead of nature is now technology. And this is a very odd situation. But look at any movie that's out. I mean, half of them are about this subject.
So this is what you observe.
Well, I think, yeah, it's a phenomenon that's everywhere. It's not just here. I mean, we happen to be, I think, maybe a little bit farther along towards this mixture of.
And so when you do, we should point out, by the way, you've been a sculptor, you art historian, a musician. And your violin, we'll talk about the nature of the violin you play and what's in it and how a human voice comes through and something else comes through. Mm-hmm. And you have God knows how much electricity around you.
Mm-hmm.
But how you do it on stage then?
Well, with a violin, I mean, in a way, to me, the violin is a kind of sort of ventriloquist dummy, really. I always wanted to make it talk. And so. And also, on the other hand, I also wanted to make my own voice sound like a violin. So there were a few things that the first violin I designed had a speaker built inside it, so it plays by itself, and then you play duets with it live. So, and that was this was about 10 years ago when I did some street concerts with this violin, and those were called Duets on Ice. Because it was a mechanical situation, it was a cassette loop that was endless, I needed a way to end the concert. So I wore some ice skates with their blades frozen into these blocks of ice so that when the ice melts and you lose your balance, then the concert's over.
It's an
arbitrary kind of timing mechanism.
Yeah.
Another violin was had instead of... It had no strings, and it didn't have horsehair on the bow. Instead, it had a playback head ripped off a pretty nice Revox, otherwise, mounted on the bridge, and then a piece of pre-recorded tape on the bow. And that's played back and forth over the head so that you get information backwards and forwards. I mean, you can put anything
in. What comes out, by the way, when people see your performance on stage, your production, there's a great deal of humor in it, too. There's humor, there's wit, at the same time as stuff that's so overwhelmingly serious and
mm-hmm.
threatening, too.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, there's this wit underlay of the whole thing.
Well, on this live album, there's a kind of silly short song with this tape ball violin called I Dreamed I Had to Take a Test.
Well, should we hear that?
Yeah, we could.
All right. I Dreamed I Had to Take a Test. This is from... At this moment, you're traveling involves two things. The printed word, the pictured word, United States is a paperback, Harper, and we can talk about, read from that as well as mm-hmm. indicate some of the visual stuff mm-hmm. in it. And the album is simply called, what, Laurie Anderson, United States Live.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this dream, I'd take a test in a Dairy Queen.
Yeah.
And then another planet.
Right. Real nightmare.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people have that test dream. You know, they have to, a lot of people have told me about that one. They get a letter and it says that they have to go back to high school or something and finish something. It's one of those dreams of things you haven't finished.
You know what I think of, as you said, you may have to take a test. I also thought of a physical test. I was visiting a certain doctor who was doing a middle-aged, sedentary inclined white males mm-hmm. involving the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, now there was this middle-aged nurse, and every time I came, I must have seen her 50 times at mm-hmm. least, and every time I came, she said, what's your name? I says, you know my name.
Remember me?
And then she said, how old?
Mm-hmm.
What's the date of you? I said, you know, we've done this, not this, but the 48th time. you know it's me, same guy. She paid no attention. And how much do you weigh? And I went, where were you born? Precisely the same thing. I could have answered anything. That's not to remove from, I dreamed I'd take a test.
That's eerie. Yeah. And there also is this incredible obsession with that kind of testing, or not just on individuals, but when people, for example, try to find out who is out there, what is mass culture, for example, in America, this surveys and polls and all ways of finding out who's there. I mean, mass culture to me seems to be a very strange way of thinking of people in a country. You know, it sounds like some kind of giant slime mold in a way that it's just capable of either total inertia or else wild exhilaration and almost nothing in between. I mean, I think in a sense every time an election comes up you can feel that huge mass out there, but you can't get a sense of who those individuals are. But testing is one way that people think that you can find an answer.
Testing and poll taking.
Yeah.
There's all connected.
Probing and kind of picking and never really.
There's no connecting link either, is that between that wild acceleration that may be ersatz in itself with the zombie-like acceptance at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing that connects the two.
Yeah. Very odd.
What's a curious phenomenon? The curious phenomenon.
The curious phenomenon is a story. It's a kind of a historical update, and it's read by John, who's my mailman. I'm on his route, and he stops in, and we chat about this and that, and he has a wonderful voice, so I asked him to read this story.
Mm-hmm, your actual mailman?
Yeah.
Oh, this is your actual mailman?
Yeah.
Oh, you're... Well, you see, need we say this is a New York mailman?
That's, yeah.
mm-hmm. And so then the reading about things that are happening.
Right.
By the way, which point that you're not making fun of this, because we have to get that thing clear. It isn't that. It's just that with mass communications, everybody's affected by the commercials we see, by mm-hmm. things we see, and so we know a certain kind of wine is now ordered in a certain kind of community where you think it wouldn't be ordered. You
right.
know. And all this is part of what you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, I like the people who escape that in a way, you know, because people are so influenced by television and by and actually learn how to live their lives by watching people on TV, and it's wonderful to see people who escape those models and decide, I'm just going to live my life the way I figured it out.
Where have you found those who escape?
Well, John, the mailman, he lives his own life, and he's not trapped by those models at all.
I think we should point out that in the performance, multimedia is obviously used, where there's a screen,
mm-hmm.
there are images,
mm-hmm.
there are flashes of, it could be almost a horrendous sight in some war,
mm-hmm.
devastation, because at the same time, there's you on stage and your colleagues now
mm-hmm.
and then. We see you in a shadow sometimes, sometimes you appear suddenly, there's a violin, there's a bagpipe,
mm-hmm.
all this, as well as all this electricity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we drain a lot of power. Once in Italy, and we could actually see the whole, we were performing outside, and we were tied into the town's power. Every time volume came up and lights came up in our concert, the lights in the town would go down. It was like this kind of crazy seesaw.
And then we come to something, Say Hello. You divide it into four parts, I think, don't you?
Yeah, well, the whole thing is, the first part is transportation, and the second is politics, third is money, and the last is love. And all the stories sort of revolve around those issues, but it begins with a story about, I could just read it.
Want me to read this?
Yeah, why don't you do that?
A certain American religious sect has been looking at conditions of the world during the flood. According to their calculations, during the flood, the winds, tides, and currents were in an overall southeasterly direction. This would mean that in order for Noah's Ark to have ended up on Mount Ararat, it would have to have started out several thousand miles to the west. Then this would locate pre-flood civilization somewhere in the area of upstate New York, and the Garden of Eden roughly in New York City. Now, in order to get from one place to another, something must move. No one in New York remembers moving, and there are no traces of biblical history in upstate New York area. So we are led to the only available conclusion in this time warp, and that is that the Ark has simply not left yet.
Yeah, so that, it begins like that. It's great to hear someone else read this. I get so sick of selling my own
you do
voice,
that you know? While on stage.
Well
on stage.
Yeah, and then it goes into I've got a violin bow that's kind of pointing to these two areas, upstate New York and Mount Ararat. And you start this kind of pendulum swinging, and then the bow starts looking kind of like a windshield wiper. That big film of windshield wiper appears behind, and the bow is kind of also like a kind of metronome that goes back and forth, and then it goes into story about driving alone at night, and it's dark and it's raining, and you took a turn back there, you're not sure it's the right turn, but you took it anyway, and eventually it starts to get light, and you look out and you realize that you have no idea where you are. So then it goes into a kind of duet that's the Say Hello duet. At the same time, this bow is white, and it is extended out, and it starts moving real fast. And then film is projected onto the bow, which, because it's moving fast, makes a kind of screen. So you see an arm sort of hovering in midair, because you're cutting into the plane of focus of the image. So you see a kind of fake hologram of an arm waving. And the conversation continues with the person who's driving and lost says, "Hello, excuse me, can you tell me where I am?" And the low voice goes, "You've been on this road before. You can read the signs. Do you want to go home? Do you want to go home now?" And then it goes back and forth between then a picture of actually the story is about this arm waving motion, because the person who's lost says, "In our country, this is the way we say hello. It is a diagram of movement between two points. It is a sweep on the dial. In our country, this is also the way we say goodbye, say hello." So it goes back. That's the kind of gesture that defines motion in the first section of the work, the transportation section.
And visually, we see it could be an illustration of something. It could be an artwork of yours, too, a drawing of some sort.
Well, in this case, what eventually appears is Carl Sagan's drawing of the humans that we sent into outer space on the Pioneer 10, a picture of a man waving and a woman who's just sort of standing there, and with our location in the universe. This was something we sent out so they'd know how to find us. And so his gesture of supposedly universal greeting is his arm is raised up.
Yeah,
so
right.
In this case, it goes, "In our country, this is the way we say hello. Do you think that they will think his arm is permanently attached in this position, or do you think that they will read our signs?" So it's a back and forth between what you're seeing and what you're hearing all the time.
Yeah.
And so the it's talking pictures.
Oh, it's a language you're talking about, too, signs.
Yeah.
But also, you have one called, as we go along, is walking the dog, closed circuits, and there's a sort of music goes along with
mm-hmm.
it.
Yeah.
And then the language of the future
mm-hmm.
you have, too. Last year, I was on a twin-engine plane coming from Milwaukee to New York City, just over LaGuardia. One of the engines cocked out, and we started to drop straight down, flipping over and over. Did this actually happen in your case?
Yeah, it did.
It did.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Then the other engine died, went completely out of control. New York City started getting taller and taller. A voice came over the intercom and said, our pilot has another microphone here.
Mm-hmm,
our
yes,
pilot sir. Has informed us that we're about to attempt a crash landing. Please extinguish all cigarettes. Place your tray tables in an upright, locked position. And then the other voice, your captain says, do not panic. Please do not panic. Your captain says, place your head in your hands. Captain says, place your head on your knees. And then he goes on, this is your captain. Have you lost your dog? Oh, by the way, there's an earlier sequence about walking a dog.
Yeah.
We are going down, and we are going down together. As it turned out,
mm-hmm.
you say, right?
Yeah.
But there were ambulances at the airport waiting.
Well, it's funny. Sometimes there things that happen to me I write about, and I sometimes change them, sometimes not. Depends. In this case, I did change it, and there were some other characters involved in this. But it's nice to hear you read this, because in the performance, this was, again, an electronically lowered voice.
Mm.
So it was... I had a kind of distance, you know, when your voice sounds totally different. I mean, it was really very low.
Mm-hmm.
I work with microphones rather than pieces of paper. You know, I try to say things instead of write them down and then read them. Because I find that, for example, if you have a voice that's that low and far from your own, that you have different things to say, really. With different things mm-hmm. come out of your mouth. It's almost like you're a different person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of writers now, for example, William Burroughs is a writer who begins by saying things. I think of him as a 20th century Mark Twain, really, because he's...
That's interesting. I know that Burroughs likes your stuff very much. In fact, I think one of your programs was dedicated to Burroughs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Language is a Virus from Outer Space.
You just said a 20th century Mark Twain, and that's an interesting... William Burroughs was writing a so dreamlike, surrealistic... in many cases, drug-induced,
mm-hmm.
but strange. His own wittiness is there, as Mark Twain's wit was
yeah.
in the mid-19th century, latter
yeah.
19th century.
I'm also thinking of all the lecture things, the tours that Twain did, because he would go around and read his stories, and people said his voice was just really incredible. I think also with Burroughs, once you hear him read or you hear a record, when you read the book, you hear that voice. You know, and it's an incredible, wonderful voice. But his sense of humor is the best, because here is a guy who appeared in the 50s, and when everybody was kind of concerned pretty much with how, you know, closely cropped their lawns were and what was happening in the PTA, this guy, it was like, you know, a long-lost uncle comes into the door, and this kind of an uncle you hoped would never show up, you know, and he kind of comes like, hi there, and everyone goes, oh no, he's back, you know? And this is a guy who started talking about other things than the PTA and lawns, and really made it a situation that opened things up for other artists. I think a lot of artists are really quite in his debt.
Well, we've done thus far, that if we touched on, there was the automobile, the wandering, the plane, transportation, that's the first part of
mm-hmm.
your book,
right.
And that's also the manner in which United States has performed on the stage as well?
Yeah, and I began with the idea of transportation, because it seemed to me that one of the strangest things really about this country is that people move around so much. And I started writing this work because I was doing a lot of work in Europe, and people would say, how could you live in a country like that? And I didn't know how to explain it. It's very hard to describe what it's like to live here to someone who has no idea. So the first thing it seemed was that people you know, they grow up in one place, then they go 1,000 miles away to go to school, then they go 1,000 miles away to take a job, and then they're transferred. And a place like Houston is almost like a camp, you know, tents, glass and steel tents. You know, people are moving in and out of that town every year, and it's like kind of migrants too.
Yeah, there's a nomadic aspect.
Yeah.
Nomadic aspect. You know, and also think of the automobile, or what the automobile, the traffic jams, the pollution, the fights, the cops chasing guys in cars, shootings in cars. You know, there have been killings over parking space. You know that.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
One guy stabbed a guy, shot a guy because
yeah.
he took his parking space.
Yeah.
So we have technology in automobile,
mm-hmm.
but since the auto, we've gone to other matters too, extraterrestrial matters
too. For example,
what's an example of the music? I know music and the talk intersperse, and just to get an idea of how you use instruments and sound,
mm-hmm.
I know in your previous, when you, Big Science was part of it,
mm-hmm.
oh, Superman.
Mm-hmm. Well, in Big Science, the live version of that is actually pretty close to the studio version. So when we played it as part of the performance, it was odd. I had recorded it first and then did the live version, so I think I learned some things from the recording. But for example, Big Science begins with an image,
uh-huh.
a picture of an electrical outlet, and real close up, so it looks, I mean, if you come right up next to an outlet, it looks a lot like a face, these eyes and mouth. And you hear this, this howl, and then light comes out of the eyes and mouth of this socket. Now, a lot of the work that I do is this kind of animation. For example, in English, there's a lot of words that are connected to life are also electricity, live wire. And I think there's a kind of confusion about electricity, which something which has so much power must have life. And in this case, Big Science begins with this image of a socket that goes, that lights up and kind of howls. After I took all of those pictures of electrical outlets, I actually felt really terrible about plugging things in because it got right into the eyes. But there is we could listen to that if you want.
Let's hear at least a
bit of
portion of Big Science. You know, Big Science, as the something was happening, several things happening at the same time. We're just hearing the sound,
uh-huh,
the music, but words are being spelled out on stage.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's what you see is a constellation being formed. You see on the screen, you see a bunch of stars, and the lines are slowly being connected like constellations, and it forms a plane, which then slowly moves, and this violin, white violin bow that I was telling you about before is again a stick that's moving quickly in the air, and caught in the air are these projected words, and you see a picture of a house, a plane, and then the word intermission, so that just cues people.
You know, I'm thinking, as you tell, we'll take a break now after this message to resume. I'm with Laurie Anderson, who, to put it mildly, is sui generis as a performing artist. All aspects are involved. And her, well, there are two things at the moment she's involved with. One is the book. It's called United States, and Harper Colophon Press, the publishers. And in it are some of the phrases, lyrics, words, and illustrations going along with it. It's, as you read it, you're really talking it, you're hearing it too. And there's the album itself. The album, these are excerpts from the United States, the 6-hour one.
Mm-hmm, right.
One album. Well, the full album, the other stuff's available too, isn't it?
Yeah, the five-record.
Five-record version.
Mm-hmm.
And just ask for Laurie Anderson, the record store, and that was Lou Laurie Anderson, say. And some of which you're hearing, passages of which you're hearing now. Let's resume with Laurie Anderson. Then you have a feeling, you spoke of the outlet before, your hesitancy of putting that plug in the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that as we're going along and more technology is getting higher and higher and higher, do you think a life of its own is developing there, aside from the human who's...
Something's coming out of that socket.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
Well, I find this when I go in elevators, different elevators in old hotels or as in this one, new kind of office buildings, I have great difficulty, and I have a feeling sometimes it's I and the elevator don't get along.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's almost a deliberate attempt. Sometimes I kick the door,
mm-hmm.
and it slowly shuts.
Yeah.
It's W.C. Fields and the picket fence.
That's it.
But
now, what is that rattling that's going on in this elevator?
Sounds like smoke's up there. It may be some commentary of sorts. This goes on. And sometimes that complete cold sound of one of those fast ones that goes zoom right up, you know, from 1 to 80.
Yeah.
But the Royal Hotel in New York, the little theatrical hotel, and that has an elevator that creaks and crackles and makes all sorts of sounds.
Well, then you know you're going somewhere anyway.
Yeah. But one or two anecdotes, perhaps, that
mm-hmm.
are part of what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
This is the New Jersey Turnpike.
Right.
And these are signs and variations. And then, perhaps, you ever read that?
Why don't you read that? Because that was Peter. This is a duet for a man and a woman.
There was an old couple who decided to drive cross-country in their car. Both of them were almost legally deaf. About 10 miles away from home, the burglar alarm for the car door went off and got stuck in the on position. They drove all the way to San Francisco like this. You could hear them coming from 3 miles away. The alarm didn't seem to bother the old woman at all. She thought it was sort of pleasant. Near Chicago, she said to her husband, "It sounds like faraway bees on a summer day." Her husband said, "What? Well, that could be John Key."
Yeah.
Has he influenced you, too, to some extent?
I love his short stories.
Yeah.
They're great.
As Merce Cunningham is dancing,
mm-hmm.
and quite marvelously, space is his work, space.
Yeah.
John Cage, along with proscenium, or standing in the with the audience, is telling an anecdote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, so why don't you... Let's assume that since you've traveled all over the world... various visitors come and have an American food and
Oh, here's another one, yeah. Well, I know this English guy who was driving around in the South, and he stopped for breakfast one morning somewhere in southeast Georgia. He saw grits on the menu, and he'd never heard of grits, so he asked the waitress, "What are grits, anyway?" And she said, "Grits are 50. And he said, "Yes, but what are they?" And she said, "They're extra." And he said, "Yes, I'll have the grits, please." He just gave up.
So, I suppose when you do the United States, and I'm sure that your next production will be Earth, you know, whole Earth, your catalog.
Whole Earth, parts 1 and 2.
Then every aspect, you put every... Now, this hour is gone. You see, where did it go, you know? Because of the fact that you're hitting so many dimensions, I think.
I got this problem when writing these epics. It's true. After I finished United States, I thought, next thing I do, it's going to be 5 minutes. You know, and of course, that was the show I did here in Chicago last spring. And that was, you know, hour 45. I kind of ran over.
You know what's so funny? As you and I are talking right now, this you hear so often on a TV program or radio program. Look, we have 30 seconds left now. What have you to say? And of course, for the guy's view of the world. Again, in 30, you hear that so often from whoever the moderator is. And you can't tell one from the other sometimes. So during these last 3 minutes or so, what is it you want to tell me? Or perhaps we'll hear music too. Is there another?
Yeah. We could.
What do you think?
Well, one of the things that I learned from working on this thing was that I actually am interested in what people want. And those ideas of utopia were a beginner.
What utopia are you talking about?
Well, I'm working on a song now about paradise, actually, and different people's idea of what should be there. And, I mean, historically, there's a lot of stuff like, it's basically what you don't have too much of here. Arab paradise, there's lots of water, very wet. Europeans' paradise is full of gold. Everything's gold. So that's my question for myself, is what I'm going to see there after this life. And then you can find out about this life through that.
What is it you want? Yeah. What is it? You're talking about values, aren't you? In a way.
Pretty much, yeah.
He's right down to that.
Yeah.
Is there a piece, which just to remind the listeners again, Laurie Anderson's The United States is this. It's beautiful. And you can read that. By the way, of course, you read this stuff out loud. Simply called United States, and Harper, the publishers, Colleton Books. And the album is with Laurie Anderson. A variety of good albums are available. I'm sure that the music stores, the record stores, have all good albums.
Mm-hmm.
But the recent one is United States, and it is an excerpt from the six-hour
mm-hmm.
version.
Well, if there's time, we could sum it up with Difficult Listening Hour.
Difficult Listening Hour. We may not play it all, but at least we can fade out with something called Difficult Listening Hour. That's funny. I like it. Laurie Anderson. Will you be coming to Chicago soon again, another performance?
Sooner or later, I'll be back.
Sooner or later. Thank you. Sooner.